Winston Churchill and His Great Leaders, a dead famous book by Alan MacDonald, illustrated by Clive Goddard, read by Leanna Vance. Introduction. Winston Churchill. Everybody has heard of him. He became Prime Minister. He stopped Hitler. He put up two fingers. Yes, Winston Churchill is dead famous for being the Prime Minister who won the Second World War and saved Britain from the Nazis. In a recent poll to find the greatest Brit of all time, Winston was voted number one, beating Nelson, Shakespeare, Queen Elizabeth I, and loads of other big names in British history. Most people agree that Winston Churchill is the greatest leader that Britain has ever had. Winston's winning role in the Second World War is well known, but that's only half his story. He didn't actually become Prime Minister until he was 65 years old. So what had he been doing for the rest of his life? Certainly not twiddling his thumbs. Right from the start, it was clear that Winston was cut out for greatness. He began his career as a soldier, and it wasn't long before he became a hero of the Boer War. Soon after, he entered Parliament, ran the Navy during the First World War, and spent time dodging shells in the trenches. When it came to telling great war stories, Churchill was the all-time champion. And even when there wasn't a war on, Winston's life was just as colorful and surprising. Did you know he was bottom of the class at school, escaped from prison, kept a budgie which popped on ministers' heads, yuck, cheap, met the President of America in the Netty, could lay 60 bricks in an hour. Winston Churchill was not only Britain's greatest leader, he was also bold, brilliant, and just a teensy bit big-headed. This earned him some criticism, but luckily, Winston was always funnier than his enemies. Some of his best jokes are collected in this book. You'll also discover the oddities of Winston's world and relive the great events of the century through the headlines in The Winston Weekly. And if you'd like to know Winston's private thoughts, you can read exclusive extracts from his Lost Diary, a book previously unknown because it was, lost. So read on to find out how Winston changed the course of the 20th century. It's a story full of blood, battles, and whopping big cigars. And it's all about me. Timeline. The early years. 1873. Baby Winnie born at Blenheim Palace. 1886, enters Harrow School. 1895, death of Papa, Lord Randolph. Sniff. 1895, joins cavalry with 4 Hussars. 1894, dodges bullets in India and Afghanistan. 1899, Boer War, great escape hits the headlines. Winston escapes Boers. 1900, Tory MP for Oldham. 1904, ditches Tories for Liberals. 1908, President of Board of Trade. 1908, marries Clummy Hosier. 1910 through 11, Home Secretary shootout on Sydney Street. 1911, a new hat, First Lord of the Admiralty. 1913, First World War breaks out. 1915, Gallipoli disaster, Winston gets the blame. 1915, Western Front, 6 months in a tin hat. 1918, First World War ends. Hooray! 1924, swap sides again, Chancellor of the Exchequer. 1926, General Strike. The workers are revolting. Winston grows up. Winston Churchill was a man with greatness in his blood. Throughout his life, even when he was in a battle with bullets flying all around him, Winston believed that he had a destiny. In other words, he reckoned he was meant to do something important and extraordinary with his life. It turned out that he was right. Winston was marked for greatness from the start. He wasn't born in a hospital, he was born in a big palace called Blenheim in Oxfordshire. Take a look at his family, and you'll see that they weren't exactly ordinary either. Father, Lord Randolph Churchill, Rising Star MP. Granddad, 7th Duke of Marlborough. Mother Jenny, daughter of an American moneybags. Baby Winston, ancestor, 1st Duke of Marlborough, great British hero. Little Winston arrived in the world before anyone was expecting him. One morning in November 1874, Lady Randolph Churchill, in those days Lady took their husband's name, so Winston's mom was known as Lady Randolph. Daft but true. Was out walking with a shooting party at Blenheim Palace when she slipped and fell. A few days later, she was riding in a pony carriage over bumpy ground when she felt sudden pains. Winston was on his way, so eager to make his entrance that he was 2 months early. He was born on November 30th, 1874, and probably looked something like this. Actually, the cigar became his trademark later, but the fat cheeks and bald head would stay with him most of his life. Once, when a mother showed Winston her baby, declaring that it looked just like him, he replied, "Madam, all babies look like me." Famously forgotten. Little Winnie didn't have a happy childhood. His parents were too busy to give him much attention. His mother was a great beauty and sparkled in fashionable society. She shone for me like the evening star. I loved her dearly, but at a distance, wrote Winston. Winston's father, a man with an impressive curly mustache and a brilliant career ahead of him, might as well have been a passing comet. Sir Winnie hardly ever saw his dad and spent his childhood trying and failing to please him. Lord Randolph was one of the brightest stars of his generation, clever, ambitious, and a brilliant speaker. He must also have been short-sighted since he failed to notice the same qualities in his eldest son. Little Winnie had to make do with his nurse while his parents were absent, which was pretty often. Winston's nurse was called Everest, but his pet name for her was Woo Manny, and she was his dear, worried friend throughout his early life. Letters from Woo Manny to Winston were always full of anxious advice to be careful. Be sure you don't attempt to get into the train after it moves off, dear. I always feel uneasy about that because you stand at the bookstall reading and forget your train. When he was 5, Winston acquired a brother, Jack, which was handy because he was soon going to need someone to play a part in his mock battles. By the age of 7, Winston was already showing an interest in war. In fact, he already commanded an army of 1,000 men, along with castles and flags. True, the soldiers were only made of lead, but Winston spent many happy hours drawing up his battle lines on the nursery floor. The first Duke of Marlborough, Winston's great ancestor, was a general in the ranks of Wellington and Cromwell, who defeated the French at the Battle of Blenheim in 1704. Since then, the Churchill family line hadn't produced many heroes. Most of Winston's forebears were famous only for reckless living and running up whopping debts. He intended to change all that and make the name of Churchill great again. Savage School. It wasn't long before Winston was torn away from his toy soldiers by a grim event. He had to go to school. Worse still, school wasn't down the road from his house in London. It was a boarding school in Ascot, Surrey, which meant Winston would have to live there during term time. A few weeks before his 8th birthday, Winston arrived at St. George's Boarding School. He hated it, and who could blame him? The headmaster at St. George's believed their well-rounded education for little boys wasn't complete without a good flogging. How to correct a naughty child. 1. Take one naughty boy and a sturdy length of birch. 2. Make sure there is a good audience. 3. Learn a boy to present himself for correction. 4. Administer 2 or 3 firm strokes. Whack. 5. Repeat for 20 strokes until boy shows signs of remorse. Thud. Flogging was common at public schools in Winston's day, but St. George's was savage by any standards. Winston remembered how the class were forced to witness each offender's punishment and sat quaking listening to their screams. By the time the last blow was struck, the poor boy's bottom was often a mass of blood, and he thought your school was strict. It's hardly surprising that young Winnie made no progress whatsoever at St. George's. He spent his days praying for the holidays when he could escape the threat of the cane and go home. Lady Randolph was disappointed with her son's lack of progress, but never mind, the headmaster assured her that next term they would be more strict with him. Winston's school reports gave little hint of future greatness. An early report might have looked something like this. School report. Pupil, Winston Churchill, age 8. History, feeble. Geography, feeble. Latin, feeblis maximus. Composition, needs to be made of stemmer stuff. Writing, slow as a snail. Spelling, about as dreadful as can be. Effort, doesn't understand the meaning of hard work. Look it up. Discipline, 20 of the best. Position in class, 13th. Number in class, 13. Not only bottom of the class, Winston was late for lessons 20 times, and that was just in one term. His report card said, he is a constant trouble to everybody and is always in some scrape or other. St. George's believed that the best way to correct a troublesome boy was to beat the trouble out of him, but Winston didn't respond well to the birch. Once he was given a flogging for stealing sugar from the pantry in the kitchens. Later he slipped into the head's room and stole a sacred straw hat from the door. Winston then took great pleasure in kicking it to pieces. This daring act of rebellion would become a legend at St. George's. How's that for a hat trick? It was Winston's poor health that came to his rescue. He was always a delicate child and suffered from mumps and measles. In September 1884, the family doctor suggested that the boy transfer to a school in Brighton where the sea air might do him some good. The new boarding school was run by 2 sisters, the Mrs. Thompson, and luckily flogging wasn't on the timetable. While at Brighton, Winston got into one of his many scrapes, but in this case the result could have been fatal. No doubt one of the Mrs. Thompson would have written a letter to his mother explaining what had happened. Dear Lady Churchill, I am sorry to have to tell you of an incident involving your son Winston. Yesterday he was at work on a drawing examination when a dispute arose between him and the boy sitting next to him. It seems their tutor had lent them a knife to use in their artwork, and this led to an argument. There's really no need for alarm, but during the fight your son received a minor stab wound in the chest. The doctor assures me that the pink knife only went in about a quarter of an inch. Winston tells me he was entirely blameless and only took hold of the boy's ear to get his attention. The other boy will be sent away, as I can't say I approve of knife attacks. When children are trying to sit exams, they are such a distraction. Humbly yours, Miss Charlotte Thompson. The sinking of Lord Randolph. Winston's poor health continued in Brighton. When he was 12, he caught double pneumonia, and his life was in such grave danger that both his parents actually came to visit. As a rule, they were far too busy with their important lives to waste time visiting their son. Young Winston pulled through, but in December 1886, a different kind of disaster struck his family. The previous summer, his famous papa had been re-elected to Parliament and offered the plum job of Chancellor of the Exchequer. second only in rank to the Prime Minister and Keeper of the country's piggy bank. However, Lord Randolph's success was short-lived. He quarreled with two powerful government ministers who were unwilling to make the cutbacks in spending he wanted. Randolph wasn't a man to accept defeat when he thought he was right, which, let's face it, was all the time. As a warning shot, Randolph threatened to resign if he didn't get his way, but the Prime Minister called his bluff and immediately accepted his letter of resignation. Poor Randolph's brilliant career was all over almost before it had started. Blink and you would have missed it. While he kept a seat as an MP in Parliament, he would never again be asked to sit on the top table of government. How to Be a Big Success by Lord Randolph. Take my advice, son. Get yourself elected to Parliament. See the world. Secretary of State for India is a good start. Get promoted. Aim for the top for thy next stop Prime Minister. Stick to your principles. If they don't like it, threaten to resign. And what if they accept? Then you're sunk. Finished. Sob. Good plan, Papa. Hooray for Harrow. By April 1888, though, things were looking up for 13-year-old Winston. He was at a new school, Harrow, with its own swimming pool, gym, and carpentry shop. Harrow was a top-drawer school for the sons of the rich and famous. Winston only scraped through the entrance exam and was happy to go there, especially as it was near London, so his parents could come and visit often. Fat chance of that. Children at Harrow didn't wear blazers or shirts. They dressed like dapper young gentlemen. This suited Winston, as all his life he had a passion for hats. A life in hats. Number 1, Harrow Boy. Top hat with room for large head. Natty tie, flower and buttonhole. Cane for swinging airily. At Harrow, Winston was no longer bottom of the class. Later in life, he liked to pretend he was a complete duffer at school, but in fact, Winston won prizes for history and reciting Shakespeare off by heart. Yet he was still a troublesome boy, forgetful, careless, late for lessons, and always losing his books and papers. His teachers were at their wits' end with him. Even when he was in trouble, Winston didn't know how to keep quiet. Now, my boy, when was the last time you used bad language? Well, sir, as I entered the room, I tripped over the doormat, and I'm afraid I said, damn. Winston's letters home were full of desperate pleas for his mother and father to come and visit him. Lord Randolph didn't come for the entire first term, but in his place sent his son a new bike. A delighted Winston rode 8 miles on it. Not long afterwards, he fell off and was in bed for a week with concussion. Even then, neither of his parents could spare the time to visit, and he had to make do with his loyal nurse Everest. None of the other boys would have been seen dead with their nannies, but Winston was proud as punch to walk his dear old nurse down Harrow High Street in front of his classmates. School for Soldiers. One of the ideas at Harrow was that the boys should be trained as army cadets. This involved marches, drills, and wearing military uniform. Sometimes there were even mock battles against other schools. The boys were issued with rifles, and Winston's job in his first battle was to carry 100 rounds of ammunition to give away in the thick of the fight. It was most exciting. You could see through the smoke the enemy getting nearer and nearer. He wrote to his parents. He didn't mention it, but we assumed the bullets were only blanks. Bang. Winston had been at Harrow for over a year when his papa finally honored him with a visit. The occasion was speech day, and Randolph made a decision that would affect his son's entire future. Winston was to join the army class. The boys in the class were being prepared to enter the army, to become officers naturally. It meant that Winston wouldn't get the chance of going to university, even though his marks were up to scratch. He had no say in his own future, and his father seems to have made up his mind based on a conversation he'd had with his son years before. Once during a holiday, Randolph found his son with 1,500 toy soldiers laid out in formations of attack. He spent 20 minutes inspecting the scene and finally asked him if he would like to go into the army. Winston innocently replied that he thought it would be splendid to command an army, and that was that. For years, Winston wondered if his father had recognized the qualities of a young Napoleon in him. The sad truth was that Randolph thought his oldest son too dim to follow a career in law or politics. That only left the army. Winston found the army class rather bare, but he did show a talent for ordering other children about which would come in handy later on. One of his letters home to his mother was dictated to a classmate. Millbank is writing this for me as I am having a bath. Later, many letters would be dictated to his secretaries while Winston soaked in the tub. Other boys at Harrow remembered Winston as a magnetic character. He dominated great numbers around him, many of whom were his superiors in light and age and prowess, said one. This was Winston's great talent, which his father failed to recognize. If he wasn't the brainiest boy in class, he was certainly the most commanding. Even as a schoolboy, Winston was a natural leader. If I had two lives, I would be a soldier and a politician. But as there will be no war in my time, I shall have to be a politician. He was right about going into politics, but wrong about war. In fact, he'd get a chance to play a major role in two world wars. What more could a boy ask for? The Battle of Banstead. The New Year holidays of 1891 were spent at Banstead, a house near Newmarket which Lord Randolph had rented. Lord and Lady Churchill were away, of course, but 16-year-old Winston had his brother Jack and his two small cousins to keep him company. He lost no time in recruiting them into his private army. You can read about these early skirmishes in his lost diary. Winston's Lost Diary, January 4th, 1891. Hurrah! The den is finished. We worked like slaves all day. At least the others did, while I issued orders and told them where to dig. It is a fine castle made from mud and planks with a straw floor. Our fortress is defended by a ditch, which serves as a capital moat. Any intruders will be repelled by fierce cannon fire.